Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Fireworks, I say. Fireworks at the East-West Gateway Council of Governments Crime Summit, if you will. Yesterday, Steve Ellman, St. Charles County executive, who's a Republican, and the mayor of St. Louis. We played this audio yesterday.
This simply says, if you want to hire a social worker, you need to hire 10 cops first. I renew my motion.
I'm sorry. This is where I draw the line, because you can no longer mandate what we do in the city of St. Louis's police department no more than I can mandate what you do in St. Charles.
This mandates a group on
hiring. City of St. Louis must hire 10 new police officers before a social worker or additional social workers are hired by the collaborative.
It doesn't say that. It says the collaborative can hire a social worker until the city decides and does hire 10 people.
We are hiring. No, you cannot mandate that we hire.
We're not mandating. We're just saying.
You are mandating. Must. Must is a mandate, Steve. So, you know what? I've sat here and I've listened to all of your amendments, but this one, I'm drawing the line.
I really need you to withdraw this. It just says
we are hiring officers.
Well, I'm not an expert. It seemed like that there was a bit of a difference of opinion between the mayor and the St. Charles County executive. Steve Ellman joins us this evening on 97.1 FM Talk. How are you, Steve? Interesting audio
I'm
from
fine.
Yesterday. I thank you for
I'm
that,
fine.
By the way. That was a little gift to me because I used it as audio cut of the day.
Well, it was Donnybrook on Wednesday instead of Thursday night.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
Yeah.
Well, so explain, maybe put all of that in a little bit further context for us, because obviously I understand, I think, what you were trying to do there. The mayor didn't like the approach.
No, she totally misinterpreted it. She's absolutely right. We can't tell the city they have to hire cops, but we're creating an organization that's going to hire social workers. Okay. And all my amendments said is that they can't hire a social worker until the city hires 10 more cops. And the fact of the matter is, it was someone said later on, the problem with the city is they can hire 10 more cops, but they'll have 15 retire or quit. So they're no better off. And then Megan Green, of course, she inquired of me and said, are you saying with this 10-to-1 ratio, are you saying that that cops are 10 times more important than social workers? And I said,
No, I would say that.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I said, what I'm saying is we need 10 times more cops than we do social workers. And that's why the ratio. And she said, well, I think they should be more even. And I said, Madam Chair, send back my amendment. And I had another amendment I offered, made a 1-to-1 ratio. Simply said, you can't hire a social worker until the city voluntarily hires another cop. I said, I'd be glad to make compromise so that I can get the vote of the president of the board of aldermen in the city. Well, guess what? She still voted against it. So the point is, and I had, we had several amendments. And the fact of the matter is, this all started And think about it, Mark. You know, the only place, one of the only places between Springfield, Illinois, and Jefferson, Missouri, where you can have a debate where every part of the political spectrum is represented, where you've got people from the far right to the far left and a lot of them in between. So, you know, I was looking forward to this debate. The city and the county, they could have gone ahead and done this program on their own, but she's the one said, let's do a regional, okay? And I'm thinking, great. And I guess I was naive. I kind of thought they want the region involved, and maybe they'll ask some of us who don't have 200 murders every year, what are you doing right? What do we need to do? Well, they brought in this Thomas Apt, and he said, you got to go ahead, first of all, and have decent law enforcement, the traditional kind of law enforcement, because you got to get rid of the bad guys that are already out there committing crime. And then you start talking about social workers to try to keep people from doing these violent acts. And I'm thinking, well, you know, if we're going to have something regional, you're going to have part of both. So I'll put up with the social workers if I can get more cops. But what came back, 95% of what they want to do is about social workers.
Right.
They didn't have anything in this plan about getting more cops, have those cops being more efficient, dealing with their ability or inability right now to cooperate with other jurisdictions. There's all sorts of things that you can do first to get this crime under control before you start worrying about sending social workers out there.
So let me back up just a little bit, because this has been going on for a while. I know you wrote about some of this back in, you had an opinion piece a couple of days ago, but some of the meetings go back a while. And I remember talking to you about this at one of our visits out to St. Charles County.
Right.
So yesterday they did vote on a plan. What enforcement? This is East-West Gateway. So when you vote on a regional crime plan, what does that mean? Is it just words? Because anything that would have to be implemented would have to be voted on by the Board of Aldermen.
Absolutely.
Or
right.
Another government body. So does this thing
exactly.
even have any teeth in it whatsoever anyway?
No, there's nothing in there that will change anything we do in St. Charles County or Jefferson or Franklin County. They could have done this on their own. If it goes forward, it will be strictly with money that they raise. Of course, I'm sure they'll find some sort of a federal grant out there to pay for all this. That was another amendment I would have loved to have offered, and that is to make sure if they're going to hire social workers, what kind of a degree do they have? What kind of certification do they have? Or are we simply going to hire somebody's brother-in-law to go out and here's the other thing. And Thomas Apt talks about all this in his book. They're going to go out and meet with these, they call them potential shooters. They claim it's effective for late teens and early 20s. Well, they've already determined that the average shooter in St. Louis City is 31 years old. So I'm not sure it even is going to work on their model. But they're going to go out and talk to these potential shooters. And guess what? They're going to bring one of the police officers along to add some gravitas and tell these young people, well, listen, we want you to go straight. We're going to help you. But if you don't, then this guy next to me is going to come after you. Well, that's just another job for the existing police to do, and they're 300 short already.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
exactly.
So, you know, not only we're digging the hole deeper instead of filling it.
So who was on this when you're meeting with this you know group 13-5, the Gateway Board? You're on this board. Who else is on this board? Bunch of business leaders, some elected officials.
No, it's all the elected officials, the county executives of the Monroe, Madison, and St. Clair County in Illinois, St. Charles, Jefferson, Franklin, St. Louis County, and St. Louis City on this side of the river. In this case, we all voted on it, and it turned out it was a straight party line vote, basically. I was hopeful that there might be some more traditional Democrats that weren't progressives that would it would go along with us,
but once
the mayor start, you know, getting all excited about it, if they agreed with me, they still chickened out and voted with her.
I love there's a quote that was from yesterday where, and this is in our local paper, it says, St. Louis Mayor Tishara Jones defended the plan saying Elman's amendment would have tipped, here's the quote, the scales toward law enforcement. Oh, good Lord.
Well, exactly.
You would. Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness. The horror of that, right? No, you would have focused on it.
The scale would have been equal.
Yeah.
I was saying 50% law enforcement, 50% the other people. And, you know, instead they got all these social workers and everything. And one of the people that they want to invite is someone from a victims group. And I told them, I said, listen, you don't need some bureaucrat, some director from a group. You need real victims. And we need to get several victims on this committee, and somebody needs to ask them the question point blank. If you could recreate the scene where your loved one was shot and killed, who would you want there in addition to whoever was
Thank
there?
You.
Would you want a social worker or would you want a police officer? A social worker to try to convince them to put their gun down, or a police officer that would defend you and do what needed to be done to stop the murder?
Thank you.
That's what people need to be asked.
So, Steve, are they? I want to see if I get some of this right. They're under the plan. You're going to have some sort of what are they doing? They're putting some body together that has 68 positions on an advisory mm-hmm. panel. 68 mm-hmm. positions.
Yeah,
that seems
yeah.
like a lot. How the hell are you going to even get anything done with that many people in some sort of advisory panel, which is going to meet four times a year? And by the way, here's a question for you: how do I get on that thing? Because I'd love to be on it. I really would.
Well, you know what? I can try to get you on, but I don't know that those are kind of still up for grabs. But one of my amendments simply said half those people need to be law enforcement. I don't care what the other half are.
Right.
My other amendment said not just, you know, because whoever has the majority of that board is going to control the agenda. And I was willing to put up with some of this stuff about social workers as long as we could also get more cops. You know, they're talking about using this program. They want to cut the number of murders by 20% in 3 years. Back in 1993, I was in the Missouri Senate. They had the same problem, even worse, down in the city during the so-called cocaine wars, okay? They had a giant spike in murders. The Democratic governor sent the highway patrol in. They put some money in the budget. They hired additional police. They hired additional prosecutors. And guess what? The murders start coming down. 5 years later, they had eliminated 55% of the murders with the traditional methods. They didn't need any social workers, but they had to get more cops. And that's all I'm asking for. I don't think that's unreasonable.
If you want to
do your social workers, I hope it works, but I'm not holding out any much hope on that.
Steve, when you, this is one of the things that's most amazing to me, especially given where we are this particular week, because
right.
we have cases from all over the country. We've had prominent cases here. And of course, Janae Edmondson and that tragedy is something that, you know, is prominent here in St. Louis. But now you have this 11-year-old boy who was killed in Chicago by someone who was released 24 hours after being released by this parole board full of social workers in Illinois. You have this cop that was killed in New York City. The incidents keep going on, and there's common threads with all this and these violent behavior. They are repeat offenders. They're recidivists. They should be behind bars. Are they that? I think this is a rhetorical question, Steve Ellman. Are the members of East West Gateway and the people and Mayor Jones focusing on trying to come up with solutions to crime completely ignorant of the facts of some of the things that are happening around them? Again, rhetorical question, because apparently they are.
Well, Mark, they've done the polling and they know defund the police doesn't sell. I think they'll admit that was a mistake to ever even use that term. So they're going to say we're not defunding the police, but what this thing does is distract the police. We already don't have enough, and now they want to go ahead and distract them and put them in a meeting with a potential shooter instead of out on the police, out on the corner where they can actually stop crime or just, you know, be a disincentive towards people doing violence.
Yeah, you got a guy that shot a police officer in New York who had a knife shoved off his ass. That's what I reported on.
Yeah.
Because he knew he was likely going back into the big house. There's no social worker that's going to help that. There simply isn't.
No.
Steve?
No, there isn't.
It's Sue.
Yeah, Sue.
Listen, when you were in that meeting, and you realize that, you know, the phrase defund the police isn't going to be popular. What is your gut on this? What is the purpose of them not wanting to hire police? What is the goal here?
Well, you know, it's a different world for me. If we had 1/10 the murders in this county that they have in the city, I'd have hundreds of people beating down my door to get into my office and demanding that, that I do something about it. Mm-hmm. But in the city, it's just like business as usual. And and I don't know. We're going to have an election in another year down there. I don't know if it's going to make any difference or not. I was in Jeff City this morning and watched the House actually pass the the bill to take over the police department. Mm-hmm. Jane says to say hi.
Well, and she'll be here on the roundtable tomorrow. I mean, yeah. Obviously, that's something. Look, you know, I was one that certainly supported, and I bought into the claims that we needed to have the local control, but that hasn't worked very well. So I think a lot of us have changed our minds, right?
I went up 10 years ago and testified for local control because Mayor Slay, who I had a good relationship with, asked me to. Mm-hmm. And I really thought, and really, when they did, and Mayor Slay was still in charge, but a lot's changed since then. And I won't blame it all on the mayor. I mean, it's just a different world. And as much as I thought it was a good idea now, I think it was a big mistake.
Well, you know, maybe it would not have been a big mistake if you had someone with the mindset on crime that Mayor Slay had.
Right.
Because it was a different mindset. You know, and then you have, I ripped her yesterday, you have Lida Cruson that comes in. Her own husband was murdered, and she becomes one of the biggest wimps on crime that I've ever seen.
I told Lida 6 months ago that she'd be amazed at how many times I've wished that she was still there.
Well, I guess compared to Tish, yeah, that might be a distinction that I would draw as well. It's just frustrating, Steve, but I give you credit for, you know, standing your ground and making these points yesterday, because there's a lot of, I think, and Sue would be an example of this, there's a lot of support from people who live in the city of St. Louis. Now, they're all white supremacists, of course, but they have different opinions of crime.
Well, my only complaint I've heard from people is I should have yelled back at her. But that's just not my style.
No,
I'm sorry.
No.
And I was in the Senate, and, you know, we learned how to debate aggressively without getting personal and without yelling and screaming.
They do that. They still do that.
They
do that
it.
In the Missouri Senate, Steve, these days. Come on.
They
haven't
do
you
now.
Been following the news?
They do now. They do now. Reminds me of one of my favorite Winston Churchill quotes. When he was in a debate and going back and forth, and he says, "How dare you try to interrupt me when I'm trying to interrupt you?"
Well, Steve, I thought you came across with class, and I thought that was the way to go.
Well, if I can get class points, I'll take them.
Steve Ellman, always great to have you on. It's been too long.
Bye,
keep
Mark.
On him. Yeah, we'll
Please
talk soon.
Good.
All right, take care. It's just so frustrating. Why is that frustrating?
Why
is that a minority voice on this whole issue?
I don't get it. What I wish is that some of these... because, you know, Jane talks about that, too. Everybody you talk to, really, the number one issue for them is reduction of crime. But if nobody's beating down her door, or if no victims' families are yelling and screaming and trying to get coverage, then this is what happens. I shouldn't blame it all on victims' families. We just need more people to be upset by it.
I think there are people and ample amounts of people that are upset, but they're not. Those voices are not amplified, and some of that goes to the issue of the media. And you know, when I say that mainly in St. Louis, I don't know that I would blame television news because, let's face it, that's all they cover sometimes is crime and stuff like that. But in the Post-Dispatch's situation, we talked about this a little bit earlier with Robert Bryce. A lot of this stuff becomes, you know, reporting by omission. And let's face it, this was the newspaper that 10 years ago, poured the gasoline on the Mike Brown situation and started a lot of this defund the police nonsense. And yeah, it was a mistake, and they know it was a mistake, but they have to own it now and try to figure out ways to deal with it. Every city in all these, you look at Baltimore. We've talked about Baltimore this week because of obviously the bridge. But a lot of these cities that have dwindling populations, urban populations, just like St. Louis, same issues, officers retiring, not able to fill the positions. But again, wouldn't it go just a little bit of a ways to get people to come on and say, yeah, I want to be, you know, law enforcement or dedicate myself to this, if you have a mayor that would come out and actually take a stand every once in a while in support of the police? And she doesn't.
Yep.
She'll make every effort to support the alphabet mafia and, you know, a case for social workers. But when it comes to actual solutions, I don't know how you could survive politically having opinions like her. But in the city of St. Louis, you can. And congratulations on that.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time? Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Cardinals are playing right now. Our friend Scott Jennings is on to talk some politics, but of course he is a huge St. Louis Cardinals fan, and shame on you and your negativity for sending that meme to me a little while ago this afternoon that says, thank you, fans, St. Louis Cardinals eliminated already because they went down 5-0 very quickly this afternoon. I guess 5-1. It is 7-1 at this point. We're just having a little fun with the Cardinals, Scott, but I'm a little nervous to say the least, right?
We have two hits. They're both by the same player,
Goldschmidt.
Paul Goldschmidt.
Yes.
And our opening, there's three hits. He just got another one.
Yep.
So, he's the only guy with a hit today. So, and our opening day starter was not available. So our other guy did not pitch very well. Although it is the Dodgers, the first three batters in their line, it's like three MVPs in a row.
I know. And Freddie Freeman just crushed a home run earlier. And yeah, but it's funny because ironically, I've been very worried about Goldschmidt just because his bat was so quiet in spring training. We know that that's happened before. You know, he gets into a groove, but he's getting older and you start to worry about that. Maybe those fears have been allayed just a little bit. But look, you know, the thing that I've heard from a lot of fans, and I don't know your position on this, the Jordan Montgomery thing kind of stings right now because that was a possibility.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what we don't really know is what was going on behind the scenes in terms of timing and how, you know, when did his disposition on a long-term deal change? But you put him in that rotation with Sonny Gray, and okay, all of a sudden it feels a little bit better now without Sonny. And I don't know. I'm very worried. I'm concerned. And this is someone who obviously watches or listens to every single game. And so
concerned. Right. And I couldn't wait and I can't wait. I'm going to be with these games listening and watching, but it gets distressing when you think about, you know, problems that weren't fixed. Like I had a friend of mine, my friend Mo Lewis in Columbia, Missouri, who does radio. He's the morning guy at BXR in Columbia. He says he's trying to be positive, and I appreciate that because he's a big fan. We were at game 6 in 2011 together. That was epic. He goes, Victor Scott turns into Vince Coleman. Mason Wynn starts hitting like Renteria. Arenado and Goldschmidt play like the all-stars they are, and the pitching gets better than we think it will be. Maybe we have a chance. And what I said was, I think all that is going to happen except the pitching, which makes us the Cincinnati Reds, essentially.
I know, and even the Reds had a great opening day start today from their guy at Montas, and so of course they're beating up on a worse team, the Nationals today. I did see some things today. I liked Victor Scott looked very, very comfortable and natural running around center field, and he stole a base today, which is great. So there were a few things in there that Goldie getting off the cold streak. So, you know, try to pick a silver lining out of a day like today. But this is tough. Four against the Dodgers, three against the Padres. This is a rough way to start a season when you're a little shorthanded to begin with.
Well, we'll hope for better things. And if you can just try to somehow go 500 or even maybe just a couple of games below in the month of April, and then try to move on from there. But we'll see. Well, plenty of time to talk baseball, and we hope to see you here in St. Louis, Scott, for a game very, very soon. Let's talk some issues here of the week. And let me start with the Ronald McDaniel situation, what your thoughts are on that, because that was a whirlwind, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the reporting on it really does make NBC look terrible. You know, they recruited her to do this, then they recruited her again to do MSNBC and pay her more money, and then they let the talent over there really bully them into reversing their decision. I mean, they're going to have to pay Ronald McDaniel. They got a signed contract, And so I hope she gets her money. It is kind of crazy, though, when you think about that the sitting Republican National Committee chairman, or at least the most recent one, is not allowed to appear on the airwaves of NBC. And I mean, she got booked on Meet the Press for an interview before she was named a paid contributor. So you obviously didn't have any trouble putting her on for that. So what's the difference? And really, it shows a lack of tolerance for, you know, essentially the viewpoints held by half the country.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, and I think it does. And this is part of the problem with the media overall. And I talk about it all the time. We address some of the bias today. It's just the way that these organizations, many of the mainstream organizations, are run. And I point toward omission a lot and some of the things that they don't tell us on a regular basis, which concerns me all the time. Let's see if you think this is a significant juxtaposition, Scott Jennings. You have the former president of the United States in Massapequa, New York, for the funeral. I guess it was the wake of this officer who was brutally shot and killed beneath his, you know, bulletproof vest the other night during a routine traffic stop. And you have the current president in New York City with a bunch of elites raising $25 million tonight. How's that going to play politically?
Well, it certainly is an interesting split screen today. By the way, the person who shot the cop apparently has a long, long record of arrests.
Yeah, 21 arrests, right.
I mean, you know, most Americans look at that and say, how can somebody get arrested 21 times and not be perpetually incarcerated? How is that even possible? And that's exactly what Donald Trump and the Republicans point to when they say we have to have a return to law and order. It's like, look, we don't want to put everybody in jail, but we'd certainly like to put the people in jail who belong there, and we need to keep them there, these violent criminals who somehow find their way out. I think this Biden fundraiser is an expected thing. You know, obviously Obama loves to campaign and loves to raise money. What I can't figure out is why they keep including Bill Clinton in these things. I don't know how this guy, given the nature of our politics today and the nature of the Democratic Party, is not fully canceled. And are you not a massive hypocrite by rolling out Bill Clinton? And then when you say what you say about Republicans or Donald Trump or whatever else, I mean, you're up there with Bill Clinton. Give me a break.
Well, yeah. And I've seen some ruminations of Clinton and Obama behind the scenes. Is there some back channeling going on? I mean, at this point, we've talked about this for so long. This is the race, Jennings, right? So it is what it is. And it doesn't seem like the White House is going to back off anything and go in a different direction on some of these issues.
No, I mean they're all in, and I think they're going to run a fully partisan race, a nasty race. They're not going to have anything for the middle of the country. They're not going to have anything to reach out to. I mean, there's probably, you know, more than a handful of disaffected Republicans out there that are uncomfortable with Donald Trump. Joe Biden's got nothing for them. He's got nothing for them. This is a fully full-blown partisan get out the vote for Democrats and Democrats only. It's what the State of the Union was. And I think that's what you're really going to see for the whole campaign. And for Trump, you know, he's got most of his party locked up. And what he's going to do, I think, is try to steal some of these working class, you know, voters. If you look at some of the national polling,
I don't think it's
going to
be that
week,
hard. It won't be that difficult, right?
It's the splits on working class people, non-college versus college. Non-college educated voters, working class Americans are livid with Joe Biden, and they're looking for something else. And it's not just whites. It's Hispanic voters. It's black voters. Basically, if you get up and go to work and, you know, trying to make a living in this country, you're not happy with what Joe Biden has done to your personal situation. And you may be looking for a different answer here in this presidential election. So that's the Trump plan. It seems like the Biden plan is just turn out as many Democrats as possible and see what happens.
Do you know this Ride to Share guy who writes over at the Liberal Patriot? Are you familiar with him?
I do not know him.
He's interesting because he's seemingly a Democrat consultant type of guy, but he writes and criticizes, in particular on these working class issues, all the time. I just pulled up one of the posts that I really liked, but they got me on the paywall, so I can't, you know, exactly quote what he said. But essentially, he had a post from a couple of months ago that talked about how this is the working class election, and he listed a litany of issues, you know, some of them focusing on some of the trans stuff, some of the culture stuff, but crime certainly was foremost in his list of things. That really every issue, Scott, was a disconnect with working class people. And it was the Democrats who were on the opposite side of the issue of the working class people. So I don't know how they think. They see the polling. You know, these are political experts working behind the scenes, consultants. They know what they're up against. How can you not change some of the messaging?
Oh, I think he's exactly right, especially on the cultural stuff. I've been saying this on CNN for quite some time. Democrats now speak a language that most working class Americans can't even understand. I mean, mothers are now birthing people. Illegal immigrants are now called newcomers. I mean, you go down the list of the new terminology and the euphemisms that Biden and his party come up with to describe things. Most people hear that and they say, what are you even talking about? What language are you? How can you and I even talk about whether you'd be a good president for me if I can't even understand the language you're speaking and the way you describe things? I think they're really playing with fire when it comes to just even the language of how they communicate with people, because a lot of folks hear that stuff and they just say, I'm going to tune you out, because if you're that ridiculous, why would I listen to anything else you have to say?
Do you have a different opinion after Nicole Shanahan was picked as the VP candidate for our friend RFK Jr. on what his influence might be in the fall?
No, other than she obviously brings lots of money to his ticket, which is what he needed. I don't think she will personally make a difference, except if she puts a bunch of money into this, that'll give them a lot of ability for ballot access. And I'm telling you, if he gets on ballots, he's going to get some votes. I don't know if he'll get 13-15% or whatever he's polling at right now, but it won't take that much to change this. And if you look at, I think this is true across all the national polling, when you poll Biden and Trump and you throw him in and you throw West in and you throw Stein in, Biden gets hurt the worst. And in a lot of that polling with those splits, Biden is almost always under 40%, the sitting president of the United States. So it strikes me that Kennedy is hurting Biden more than he's hurting Trump. And I think that's because there's some progressives and working class people and other voters out there who just are so dissatisfied with Biden. They're looking for another door to go out. Maybe they don't love Donald Trump. But, you know, if a Democrat vote that was a banked vote for Biden switches to Kennedy, that's okay, you know, if you're Trump, as long as you hold your people together.
Well, and then, but the other, I think the bigger risk for the Democrats right now, I think you might agree with me on this. Look, you look at the polling of the African-Americans who are just going to simply stay home. Maybe they won't vote for Trump. Maybe they won't vote for RFK Jr. They stay home. That's going to have a huge impact. We saw it in 2016.
100%. And I'm looking at, you know, national poll after national poll, you're looking at splits. African-Americans, something between 20 and 26% routinely turning up for Trump. Now, all the Democrats go on TV and they say, oh, that'll never happen. He'll never get 20% of the African-American vote. Well, what if he gets 15? If he gets 15%, this race is over. And so it's obvious to me that particularly among African-American men, there's something happening. They don't like Joe Biden. And whether they sit it out or whether they fully switch to Donald Trump, that's a massive pain point for Joe Biden, who's trying to hold that coalition together. I mean, look, he got 7 million more votes than Trump in the last election. But you and I both know there's a bunch of people who voted for him because they were uncomfortable with Trump and everything he campaigned on. I'm a deal-making moderate.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to bring the country together. I'm not going to be a divisive person. I'm a transitional president. I'm a bridge to the next. None of this has come true. The country is more divided now than when he took office. The economy is worse. Not a single promise he made has been fulfilled, and he duped a lot of people into it.
I think that sums it up quite nicely, Scott Jennings. Always great to have you on. The Cardinals lose the opener 7-1. Hey, we can still split this series, right?
We can, and the great thing about baseball is there's always tomorrow.
That's right.
Let's do it tomorrow.
We'll see you soon. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Mark.
Yesterday was the one-year anniversary of the mass shooting at the Covenant School in Nashville, Tennessee, by transgender killer Audrey Hale. And there really are not a lot of commemorations or memorials. There's one on Easter Sunday, but you're not going to have anything that pays tribute to the slain Christian children from the school. And here is the event that's coming up this weekend at the Graveyard Gallery in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, which is always a hard name for me to say.
Yes.
Murfreesboro. It's Murfreesboro, right?
Something
like that. They are hosting a rock concert celebrating Trans Day of Vengeance. Yeah. March 31st was supposed to be the Trans Day of Visibility, but they thought that vengeance was a better theme on Easter Sunday. Jazz Shaw wrote about this on hotair.com. He asked this question. He said, look, doing such a thing on Easter makes you kind of wonder if they lack any sense of irony or if they're doing it to be deliberately provocative, which I think might be the case. But they're hosting a Trans Day of Vengeance concert just a day after the one-year anniversary of the deadly shooting at the Covenant School in which a transgender identifying woman killed three children and three adults, apparently out of ideological fury. And by the way, we still don't have the, you know, the manifesto released. And I thought we were going to get a little bit more.
Why is that?
Well, it's just bizarre. We had some of that was leaked in the fall. It was this strange coalition, and we don't really know all the answers of the parents at the school. And also, I guess, people that supported, I don't know if they support Audrey Hill, I don't want to say that, but trans rights, you know, folks, they don't want some of the manifesto getting out there because of the way that it targeted the Christians and the, I don't know, Sue, I really don't know the answer. It just seems ridiculous because I think it raises more questions, and this is when you have conspiracy theorists. So why not be transparent on it? I don't want to cause more pain for the families, but I just don't understand. They have to give me a better reason for why they don't want that manifesto released. Essentially, what they say is, well, it's just going to create more pain and agony and force us to live through some of the things that we lived through a year ago. But I think transparency is better. By the way, that concert is also a fundraiser with the proceeds reportedly going toward purchasing chest binders for women who want to look like men and financial support for trans surgery and other treatments. So that's very thoughtful of them when three kids and three adults die. So that was one story that I thought was interesting. Here's another one. You know, you have a situation in Time magazine where they have written about some folks out there in the aftermath of the pandemic, even though 40% of Democrats still think we're in a pandemic. They call them the COVID cautious. These are the people that are in that 40%. They feel abandoned by the rest of us in the government as well, even though COVID is no worse at this point than the flu. And I think that if you really dig into the numbers from this winter, the flu was probably a little bit more dangerous than COVID. Now, it's still allegedly leads to the deaths of American people. But we also, I don't know if we can trust those numbers completely because of the way that they handled that during the actual pandemic. But in Time magazine, this is how they reported on this story of the COVID cautious. For all of 2020, Alex, a 28-year-old living in New York, followed the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's COVID-19 guidance religiously. Then in 2021, something began to shift, Sue. That spring, the CDC said it was okay for vaccinated people to ditch their masks in most places, but people were clearly still getting sick, including Alex, who got COVID-19 for the first time in late 21 and later claims he developed long COVID. Now, I say claims because I've seen some research on long COVID, which has indicated that primary situation with long COVID sufferers is psychological. And maybe that's Alex's issue as well, because he says that he doesn't understand why we're letting our guard down in 2024. He's talking about right now, in the spring of 2024. Why are we letting our guard down? Why are we not having more forced masking? This is the actual story in Time magazine, right? So that kind of gives you a little bit of a hint on where the media is in this country. Let's do this, though, this afternoon, because I do have some audio to get to.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, I have a couple here, and I did want to toss this in here just because I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, and I guess I had hoped on Tuesday when I mentioned that in the aftermath of the Key Bridge collapsing and this terrible tragedy the other day, that somehow, some way, race was going to come into the equation. And Sue, you even said, well, how would they do that?
Yeah, I did.
And they did it, because you have stories right now in The Hill that the headline is Race, the Construction Industry, and the Francis Key Bridge. In the Washington Post, they also wrote about how Francis Scott Key was a slaveholder. And of course, the verses of the national anthem after the verse that we all sing have references to slavery. And of course, anything that happened in history, if you were a slaveholder, even though there are a lot of people that were slaveholders, including Native American people, right?
Yes.
But if you were a white founder of the country, of this country, well, then you're an evil, evil person, and there's no redemption whatsoever, even after several hundred years. But Lee Zeldin, who's a former New York congressman, kind of chimed in on this because, again, it was almost too easy of a prediction, and he summed it up quite nicely.
These kinds of tactics alone should be disqualifying. When you have this ship collide with a bridge, the bridge falls down, and you're searching for survivors, the tragedy is hit, and the people in charge are kicking back and say, oh, let's see how we could turn this into an opportunity to pit black Americans against white Americans. How can we stir a racial divide in our country? Let's lead by tearing the population apart because of the bridge. Let's use this as an opportunity to advance our agenda of maybe being able to someday cancel the national anthem.
Yeah, think about this. There are people at the Washington Post, The Hill, I'm sure the New York Times, and I'm guessing the St. Louis Post-Dispatch that sit in an office and they have discussions about this. We have a terrible tragedy. People died. We still don't have some bodies. You have an area that's been somewhat paralyzed. You have a country that will be affected by this. But one of the first instincts they have in an editorial meeting, our legacy media in this country, is let's talk about slavery and how Francis Scott Key is an evil white supremacist and nothing should be named after him. Let's not worry about this other stuff. It's revolting.
It is revolting.
And disgusting that that's sometimes the priority. The other thing that's disgusting is the reaction of some people to Jonathan Diller's murder in New York City. And there was a wake that was held today in Massapequa. My understanding after speaking with Brian Kilmeade yesterday is that's his hometown. Brian was supposed to interview former President Trump for One Nation, which airs Saturday night at 8 p.m. But you have the current president in New York City fundraising. Now, as Scott Jennings indicated, these things are sometimes, you know, planned a long time in advance. But President Trump went to the wake of Officer Diller today.
What happened is such a sad, sad event, such a horrible thing. And it's happening all too often, and we're just not going to let it happen. We just can't. 21 times arrested this thug. The person in the car with him was arrested many times, and they don't learn because they don't respect. They're not given the respect. The police are the greatest people we have. There's nothing, and there's nobody like them, and this should never happen. I just visited with a very beautiful wife that now doesn't have her husband. Stephanie was just incredible. Their child, brand new, beautiful baby.
Yeah, one-year-old who is now left with no father. Now, be careful, Donald Trump. They'll be writing about you in the Washington Post and The Hill and the New York Times because you use the word thug. That's terribly racist on your part. Have a great evening. The Cardinals lost already today. There's more baseball tonight. There's NCAA basketball. And there's a Reardon Roundtable in less than 24
Yay.
Hours. Have a good night, Sue.
You too.
Get more at 971talk.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time? Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.